Hey there, folks. Welcome to another edition of Stranger in a Southern Land. I, of course, am your host, Jake Manning. Today on the program, I have Spencer Taylor, comedian Spencer Taylor, and winner of Wheel of Fortune, Spencer Taylor. That's right. We talk about it. We get the dirt on Pat Sajak and Vanna White. Well, not really. We actually get very nice stories about Pat Sajak and Vanna White. But it is discussed. Wheel of Fortune is something we kick off with. But that wasn't the main reason why I wanted to talk to Spencer. Spencer posted on Facebook about, you know, how she wants herself to be defined as a comedian. And she doesn't want it to be solely defined upon her race or her gender. And it was a comment that kind of struck with me. And I asked her, would you like to come on my podcast and kind of talk about this topic a little bit further? And she said yes. And she came on and we talked about it. And see, that's the beauty of podcasts, I think, is that, you know, people can just say something in 150 characters or just in a short Facebook post, but we don't really get to see all aspects of it and how that idea was formed and how they felt about it and just the detail and in-depth in a long-form conversation like this. It really just kind of covers all facets of it. And that's why I love podcasts. And that's why I love podcasting, is I can have wonderful and in-depth conversations like I have with Spencer, because we cover it all. This is one of my favorite interviews, I'm not gonna lie. Well, not interviews, but conversations. Not really interviews, because it was just a conversation. It was just flowing. Like, this was a lot of fun, and just I think me and Spencer have kind of come a little bit closer, because, you know, she's one of those people I'd see at open mics, and, you know, it's always a very high bye, always very nice and polite, and might ask each other a question or two, and that's about it. But this is, like, the first time we sat down for almost, like, a solid hour and just had a good conversation, and I'm so happy to have this, because she's such a wonderful and bright individual and very funny individual, and hopefully you feel the same way after listening to her today. But like I said, the power of podcasts. We get to cover all aspects. We get to really get in depth with people and what they really mean and what they say. So another reason why I like podcasts, because I get to meet people like at the Shining Wizards Podcast Network. They were early adapters to the Cool Kids Table. They jumped on board. They're like, hey, I don't know about that guy over there. And I was like, hey, you don't judge people at the Cool Kids Table. And you're right. They're like, no, we don't judge people at the Cool Kids Table. We have a Cool Kids Table too. We know how it is. Can we push our Cool Kids Table up against your Cool Kids Table? And I was like, sure. Come on over. More the merrier at the Cool Kids Table. No judgment. Let's just all work together and make it all happen. And that's exactly what I'm doing with Shining Wizards Podcast Network. And they've got a lot of great people over there. And I can't thank them enough for all the support they give me. And, you know, if you want to support them, just walk on over or log on to. I mean, we can't really walk over. It's not really a physical location. You can't really walk onto the internet. You can walk with your fingers over to shiningwizardsnetwork.com. That might be a little bit more useful to you. Speaking of things that are useful, now would be a good time to start plugging some dates. That's what podcasts are also useful for, is letting people know where I'm going to be at, so you have an opportunity to meet me, see me, come watch me wrestle and do all kinds of things. I just got a couple here for you. Most notably, Sunday, April 17th, PWX returns to Charlotte, North Carolina, just off Independence Boulevard at Escapade, just in the shadow of the old Independence Arena. And for more information about that show, make sure you log on to PWXPro.com. And then Friday, April 22nd, and Saturday, April 23rd, I will be wrestling in upstate New York for Northeast Wrestling. I'm not really sure about where I'm going to be at, but guess what? That's where you can just start doing a little bit of walking with your fingers and walk on over to northeastwrestling.com. Also, too, if you want to do a little bit of walking and punching with your thumbs and scrolling through on your smartphones and do a little bit of walking that way, you can walk over to me on social media, because it's very easy to do. All you have to do is just follow me on Twitter at ManScoutManning, or follow me on Instagram at ManScoutManning. If you have a question about the podcast, or if you want to become a sponsor of this podcast, make sure you email me at jake@sslshow.com. Or if you want to book me for an upcoming wrestling event, make sure you email me at manscoutmanning@yahoo.com. Anyways, without further ado, let's jump into this wonderful, in-depth conversation with the very funny, very talented, especially in Wheel of Fortune, Spencer Taylor. here on Stranger in a Southern Land. Here with Spencer Taylor, and one of my favorite comedians here in the local Aww. Era. I definitely enjoy.
Wait, are we doing it?
Yeah, we're doing it right now.
Oh my goodness! See, I thought that there was going to be some sort of a prep.
Well, this the prep. Do you need prep?
No, I'm ready.
Okay, we're just having a conversation.
All right, cool.
Little or no pressure. You know,
all right. Yeah.
I hit record from the second you walked in. So.
Just commenting about random stuff in your house.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, the Foxy Brown poster, the coffee poster that's sitting on
the front. I like this room. This room's real neat.
You like this room?
Yeah.
This is the weirdest room in the house. Of course you would like
this. Yeah, this is my style, especially like that everything's like stacked on top. That's how I roll. I'm not neat.
Oh, this room is basically like a very large closet.
Yeah, that's my whole apartment to me.
Yeah, it's like a large closet with a very expensive computer and a bunch of expensive equipment.
Yeah, and a video game system, which is real cool. Does it work?
Yeah. Yeah. When Nick was over here, I was like, maybe I should break this out and start it up.
Oh, he'd be so excited.
Yeah. I think we both had to run or something like that or get out of here.
Oh, okay.
Not physically run, yeah, run away.
Go. What's happening?
Neither one of us do that very well anymore, especially me with a torn ACL these days.
Ouch.
So,
yeah. You could limp away quickly.
Yeah, limp away quickly.
You could jog. I don't know.
Briskly walk.
Power rock.
Yeah, do that. But anyway, Spencer, thank you for sitting in and talking with
cool.
me. And it's, like I said, I really, really been very excited to do this for quite some time, and a lot of stuff's come up. But also, too, like, I also wanted to talk about this. I've never asked you about this.
What is it?
Your experience on Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was the funny thing. I asked you to do the podcast, and the next day you posted, like, a Flashback Friday of you being on Wheel of Fortune.
It's funny that so many people don't know, because I don't bring it up.
I'm sure old ladies that are in their 60s know that you are Wheel
yeah,
of Fortune.
Yeah, I posted it. Do you ever go on Reddit?
No, so you and Nick are so big on Reddit.
Oh, I love Reddit. You got to go on Reddit. It has everything. They have... So they are all, it's like basically a website of all websites. Mm-hmm. So it's just links to a bunch of other things and people comment on it. Yeah. And they have what is called subreddit. And you can think of the most abstract thing, like a sandwich. And they'll have a whole subreddit just on sandwiches and how to make them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I posted, after I went on Wheel of Fortune, I posted a, have you seen the Success Kid memes? It's like a little kid and he's like, yeah. And then
Yeah.
So I posted one of those and I said, got on Wheel of Fortune, won Wheel of Fortune. And then I ended up doing an AMA, which is an Ask Me Anything, where people asked about the experience. And then I just talked about it online. It was pretty cool.
Well, let's have an AMA about it right now. How did that opportunity come around?
Everyone asked me that, and I think they want like some exciting, like, oh, I was chosen between the. I auditioned.
<That's> it, <Jack. laughs>
he called me. Yeah, he
called. Miller Boyette Company.
I was sitting on the couch, and he busted through the door and is like, "You on my show?" No, I'm part of like the Wheel Fortune Club. I don't even know what it's called, but I was part of it in college because you could win money.
Okay.
I didn't win any money. I completely forgot about it and that I even signed up. I think it's Wheel Watchers Club. And then like years later, I get some random email, and that was 2 years ago, that's like, hey, there's an audition coming near your area. I said, okay.
Yes, I remember the audition coming around because there was a bartender in the French Quarter. I think he was on it as well.
Was he really?
Yes.
Was he a stand-up as well? Because I know that there was another... Charlotte Stan, but I do not
think he was a stand-up. Oh,
okay.
I know he was a bartender at Hooligans in the French Quarter.
Maybe he was a little funny. Who knows?
Oh, man, yeah.
Well, maybe he's probably comical.
Maybe a little funny. I don't know.
He was a little funny.
He was funny, yeah.
Yeah, so when it came around, it was like a wheelmobile. And what they did is you had to sign some... Like, there were so many people there. I can't even begin to describe it. It was at a car dealership. It was very random. You had to sign up on this piece of paper and like give your information. And then they did it like... have you ever played Bingo where they have those big turning things?
Yeah.
They put all of them in there. So everyone's like, oh. You know, because they thought... everyone would get an audition and stuff. Nope. And it was basically a lottery system. And they're like, don't worry. Some of the people who aren't auditioning right now might get to later. And it's bull. So I was the last name chosen on the last round they did. And I went up and I pretended, like, you're supposed to pretend there was a fake van and there was a fake pack. And you're supposed to like do the puzzles and stuff. And it was fun. Mm-hmm. And then they said, tell us an interesting fact about yourself. And I swear to you, they said, don't say that you watch Wheel of Fortune or that you love word puzzles, because that's what everyone says. You want to stand out. every single person pretty much. Oh, I don't know. I like Wheel of Fortune a lot, and I'm real good at world puzzles. It was blowing my mind. I was like the only one who went up there and had a fact about myself. So I said I did comedy, and they said, can you do a clean joke? And I said, I can, and I did one. And then second round of auditions 2 months later, and they said, we'll let you know in 2 weeks. And then I got things.
You told your necrophilia joke, and they're like, yes.
Yeah, there you go. Necrophilia. Went straight from necrophilia, dropping babies, all kinds of clean, family-friendly jokes.
Yes.
But yeah, so there were two more audition rounds. You had to take a test, and then blah, 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 blah. Fast forward. They gave me 2 weeks to prepare. They're like, hey, you're going to be filming in 2 weeks. See you then. And I flew out there. And
flew out to L.A., I'm guessing.
Yeah, flew out to L.A. Yeah. And they do them back-to-back. People don't know that. And so Vanna would just, like, disappear, and then she'd come back with a different dress on.
She would go in her cryogenic freezer.
She was so pretty.
She's ridiculously pretty.
And she was, like, so nice. She came out without makeup, and she goes, hey, people just usually don't know what I look. Well, everyone's all nervous sitting in the back. Yeah. She's like, people don't know what I look like without makeup. Here I am. I just thought I'd say hi, you know, disarm you guys a little bit. Don't be scared. You're going to do great. And she was just so nice.
So Vanna White without makeup, but
She looked exactly the same. Like, she looks so good.
She's like 87 years old, and she looks better than like girls that are in their 20s.
Yeah, she's beautiful. She's timeless. And they're talking like eventually they're going to have to replace her and Pat as they're getting older. And I cannot imagine that someone else, there's another specimen like Vanna White.
Yeah, there can't be.
A timeless specimen.
There can't be. Because like she, like I said, she's got to be 87 years old. That's at least how it works out in my head.
Yeah. Like, but I don't get... The weirdest things, I don't get nervous about things like that. So when they were taping and stuff, one, I did not, if you watch the episode, I don't know where the camera is the entire time until the end. And then I'm like, huh. So I'm just looking awkwardly off into the side, probably how this looks, where I'm just like not focusing, but I look real happy.
You're ignoring the red light that's over there.
Exactly.
I've got red light fever. I find it.
You're like,
you know?
Oh, look, hello.
I'm here. There you go. That's where I go to.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't know where the camera was, but the person, two people next to me, it was a man and a woman. The girl's like, oh my God, we're about to be on TV. And the guy goes, I'm going to throw up. And I'm like, huh, I got this then. Because I was completely calm.
Yeah, you could play the game.
It's like, all right, I got it. Yeah. And I did not get the final puzzle. Okay. I had like, I think three of the letters of a phrase. Like it just did not, it would not have worked out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Pat said afterwards, he's like, oh, he would have gotten the last one. And wouldn't you? And I said, yeah. The last one was easy. The one that was taped before us, we were the second one taped. But I didn't get it. And I didn't care because I didn't go in there with any money, but I ended up winning two trips, which I've taken both. I went to Costa Rica and one to Hawaii. Oh, wow. And then a camera and then like $2,500. And then you get like $1,000 per trip right before the trip.
So that's awesome. One.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great story.
The end. Yeah. But I don't bring it up because I don't have any jokes about it.
Yeah.
So I just don't bring it up. I don't bring it up on stage. And then I completely forget that it happened because you would understand this. That's something that a lot of people, it would be like a big special moment in their life. Yeah, exactly. You do something, you talk about parties for the rest of your life, but we do something so unique. You do doubly as unique things because you do wrestling and do stand up.
It's not as impressive as you think.
So like my goals are like in the future, it's all stand up based. So like game show didn't even like.
Yeah, like, it's weird. Like when I would did the morning news just to promote a wrestling show, people were like, oh my gosh, you were on the news.
The news.
You were on TV. And I was like, it's just a morning show. Like,
yeah, we're I was on the show, whatever.
And I went into it as like, I wanted to do a good job because I'm like, eventually I want, you know, stand up to be a job where I'm doing the morning news every, you know, week to whatever, get people to come out to whatever club I'm performing at. You know,
exactly.
Like, oh, it's like that, like, this is just going to be a regular part of what I do. So
it doesn't factor in. I'm not like purposely not talking about it. I just don't think about it.
Yeah. Cause you want to be like, to a point where you're on Celebrity Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah. You know that would be like, awesome. Do you guys remember me? No.
Yeah.
they're very nice, but I'm sure they don't remember anyone ever.
Yeah, but it's weird when you work in like, you know, stuff that entertainment and things like that. You just like those opportunities you don't even think.
Yeah, it's just normal. And it didn't further my stand up career in any way.
No.
So
it was just a thing.
Yeah, just a thing. It's a little blip. Niche.
Yeah. Something really cool to put in your stand up intro, you know?
Exactly. Everyone expects me to talk about it and then I don't mention it even once. Which is
it was
kind
a
of
wonderful
fun.
Experience and nothing messed up happened.
Yeah, exactly. I won the end.
Yeah.
I went to Hawaii. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, you probably write some material about it if like Vanna White unzipped herself to turn out to be like
her and Pat Sajak are the same person.
Yeah, exactly. They just have to cut like you're like, oh, that's
a Miss Doubtfire kind of.
Yeah, or she's like a hologram or something.
Oh, that would make so much sense.
It would make a lot more sense.
Yeah,
what's really
I'm a little
on.
Sad that she's not a hologram now. I'm gonna have to go back to the experience and And really, I feel real sad about that. That would have made it so much better. We saw something else that happened. I went with my sister and she was like primping and stuff. And she's like, I'm like, why are you primping? You're not on TV. She goes, well, if you win and get to the final round, I'll be on TV. And I said, the chances of that happening. And then she was. So I'm glad she got her primping
she's
out.
She's prepared. She believed
yeah.
in you.
Yeah, she did.
She believed in you.
That was pretty neat.
And is the same sister that runs the furniture store?
Yeah. So I've got one sister, one brother.
Okay.
And yeah, she owns a furniture store.
Yeah.
And Tuft.
Tough.
Yeah, it's real cool.
Sometimes
we did. She does so many events with alcohol, which I am a nervous person, and she does not care. Like she'll have wine and stuff like around her furniture, but she'll do like DIY classes. And she had a stand up show there the other week, just kind of to humor us. And she said, "You could do this regularly if you want." So it's such a cool venue if you ever want to go to Tuft. And just sit on couches and watch stand up. She's such a good host. She popped popcorn.
Yeah, like I was there.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah.
Here I am explaining it to you like you weren't in the show.
No, like I was there. And it's funny that you talk about like she lets people because Pint Central's just right.
Yeah,
on the corner,
yeah, exactly.
And people just come over with drinks. And it's funny that you, talk about like you know, like drinks around their furniture because it's high quality furniture.
Yeah, you saw it and you like the prices. She keeps them reasonable, but it's still like it's nice furniture.
Yeah, I was like, oh well, this front row seat is $400.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so you don't even have to pay for that. You get to sit in it for free.
Exactly. Well, and there was a guy there, and you know when you see a person that is completely unaware of his surroundings.
Yes.
And you're like, this asshole. Like this guy right here is going to cause some mayhem.
It's you, sir.
He doesn't like recognize what's around him.
Yeah.
I see people like, cause I'm so aware. I think you and me are very similar that we're very aware of our surroundings.
What's going on.
So that's why we get very introverted sometimes.
Yeah.
But
sure.
And the people are just so gregarious and walking through life that I look at those people like, oh, I hate you.
So you're going to do something.
You're going to do something.
You're the one.
And one guy just very, and he was, and I could just see it, and he knocked over
Is that the guy who, it's so funny. I think I had like a headache that day or something. So I was sitting off to the side and wasn't very like involved. But yeah, I saw it all play out. My sister just walks over and she goes, I said, what happened? She goes, oh, someone spilled a beer. She's just very nonchalant. I would have been like, ah!
It was all over. Oh. All over this chair. It was like $600. Like
she's just like, eh.
And she was like, oh, and she was apologizing to the, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, why are you apologizing?
My sister's nuts.
I was like, that is overly nice that I'm so worried about
I'm sorry you spilled beer on my couch.
Yeah,
I would say that, but like sarcastically.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I'm sorry you spilled beer on my couch.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but she really means it.
Yeah, she really meant it. I was like, what?
Yeah, we're very different people. different from my siblings.
Well, a lot. Let's talk about your siblings and how different you are. Like, how did you guys grow up? Like,
differently.
Differently?
Well, they're 9 years older than me.
Okay.
So that alone, that's a pretty big gap.
Yeah.
So we weren't really hanging out when I was like five and they were, I can't do math. 14? Ah, oh, good job, Spencer. When I was five and they were 14, like, what do you do with a five-year-old?
Yeah. You know?
Nothing. So I didn't really get... Yeah, exactly.
Well, do they wrestling even, moves on them?
They didn't interact with me like that at all or much, you know?
Yeah.
But I had foster siblings because my parents were foster parents. And so at any time, I had like at four or five siblings that were my age to play with and stuff like that. And that's kind of... So they did their own thing and I kind of had my own thing going. And then when we got older, we got closer, of course, because that age gap doesn't matter
as much
when you're in your 20s.
Yeah, once you turn 20.
Yeah, exactly.
But you said foster. You had foster kids around you and stuff like that. What made your parents want to take children in?
I think my mom was adopted. And I think she just kind of knows how the... Especially in New York. We lived in New York. I grew up in New York till I was around 10. Then we moved to South Carolina.
The city or where?
No. Long Island, like in the suburbs.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're
like it was just
real
up
close.
There.
Yeah.
So like,
real close to the city, but not like right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Train so, right like away. I said, I was just up there. So all those places are fresh in my memory.
Yeah. Exactly.
And eventually I'll forget those. So a week from now.
Yeah. So we were close to a place called like Port Jefferson. So seafood was awesome. Mm-hmm. But in New York, especially, man, the foster system is just not very good. So my mom's always wanted to do something. And I don't know if she, at first it was like adoption, but then I think that she realized that she could probably do more for more kids if it was fostering, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we had Fanny and Angel, who I can still consider, you know, like my brother and sister when I think about them growing up. They, I'm still in contact with them and everything like that, that they lived with me for 3 years and I love them, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a weird dynamic to introduce new people into your household, but it also kind of shapes who you are. You know,
yeah.
I think I'm very giving and I think a lot of that is that kind of scenario.
Yeah. Well, when you grow up and that's would you know? And your parents have such an example of that. That's just something. Now let me, like, fostering, like, how does that work? You these kids are brought to you in, like, until they're adopted, or how does that work?
Well, there's a lot of misconceptions. Sometimes it could be something as simple as, like, financially, the parents are working towards a goal. You know what I mean? And it's a misconception that, like, the parents don't want the children and that's why they're in foster care. No, most of the time the parents definitely want their children and they're working very hard, but they just can't financially support them at the time, or there's some legal things. And a big legal thing that in New York at the time was marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, you have marijuana when when the police are looking into you, you get your kids taken away, which nowadays, you know, that seems a little more taboo because it's becoming so legalized around the country. And it's really sad when you think about that children being taken away from, you know, parents because of something like that.
Something like that when other parents are high on Oxycontin.
Exactly. And they're nice prescription drugs.
Pills.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's completely fine.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. As long as there's a prescription, you can be strung out all day. Yeah. Or you can be an alcoholic because that's completely legal. Yeah. You know, but God forbid. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent.
Soapbox.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of the kids, their parents are just like kind of getting stuff together. You know, everyone hits a hard knock in their life. And when you have children, if you have multiple children, or if, you know, you live somewhere like New York where the cost of living is so high, then you sometimes need a little assistance. And that's pretty much all it was, you know, assistance.
Okay.
Yeah. So all the foster children that we had went back to their families, and, you know, families were always there, you know, always like involved and everything like that. It wasn't just like they weren't getting adopted out.
Yeah, it wasn't like these kids are dumped here, they don't know where the parents are.
Exactly.
It's much more different advice.
Yeah, it's so different than people think.
Okay.
Which is good, because I like that we're able to talk about that, because there's just this stigma that I don't like about it. Like, your parents didn't want you or something like that. That's just not true.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everybody's got a different set of circumstances
and
stuff like that. But what were the circumstances that led you to end up in the South? Because, like, I know a lot of people that are, you know, from New York and they just end up in South Carolina. You know, they just end up here down here.
Like, well, I didn't have a choice in the matter. I was 10.
Well, I mean, how did your parents make that decision to go there?
My dad is the kind of workhorse that he's 70 now and still works 7 days a week. Like, he cannot be sitting still. He has to be doing something.
My grandfather was like
that. Same way. Yeah. So he has to be doing something. And just the stress of New York and the smog and all that, he ended up being unhealthy and, like, had a heart attack.
I was there for 4 days. I'm a wreck right
you're probably on the cusp.
That's why I have a runny nose right now.
Exactly. You just say you're sick just from being in New York for a little bit. So,
yes, I am.
So my mom was like, somewhere with a nice, calm lifestyle. And she read some book or something like that. There were, like, the top 8 places you wouldn't think to move but are actually really great. And Greenville, South Carolina was on them. And she said, all right. And then we moved to Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay, so they just put blindfold and spun the globe and
pretty much
moved to Greenville.
Yeah.
And what was he doing here in Greenville? Like, how did that?
My dad, people might think I'm lying just by the things I say. Oh, I was on Wheel of Fortune. I had foster siblings. Hey. My dad's a priest. He used to be a Catholic priest. He was
priest.
Yeah, ordained in Italy and all that. But now he's an Episcopalian priest and he's a social worker. So he does that here. But they didn't need an Episcopalian priest that spoke English, and my dad speaks 7 languages. So instead, he does it completely in Spanish. And in New York, he did it in Portuguese and in English.
Oh, wow.
That's
very impressive.
He's way more impressive than I am.
You can speak the gospel in several different languages.
It's because when you are a Catholic priest, you have to learn Latin, or at least you did back then. I don't know if the rules have changed. I mean, again, he's 70. Once you learn Latin, especially if you have a mind like my dad's, then he said it's very easy to learn all the Romance languages. Mm-hmm. And then to challenge yourself, you pick a language that isn't any similar to a Romance language and actually helps you learn secondary Romance languages better. Mm-hmm. And then my brother speaks Chinese. He learned in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And I speak kind of Spanish. Kind of Spanish. I can get myself around, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, I know a few German words, and my favorite thing to do is just say all of them right in a row to a German person, because they recognize the words, but they don't make sense. It's basically like me saying desk, lamp, blue, eraser.
This guy's trying to tell us something.
He's trying to tell me something. I recognize all these words, but he's talking too fast. But they don't make any sense. My brain can't process it.
Quickly, quickly. The eraser. It's what are something you saying? With the eraser and the lamp.
What? Blue sky? What?
That's how it is to talk to a toddler. Maybe they think you're just a little special.
That's not the first time I've been accused of it.
And with such urgency, too. Yeah. German always sounds so intense.
It is.
Anything you say. So even if you were saying lamp or something, I would think something was going down, like you were doing some sort of a deal, like something sinister. Because it just sounds so, wow.
Because we had a foreign exchange student from Germany. And
that lived with you?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
And she actually ended up falling in love and marrying my best friend from high school.
Aw.
So she's kind of part of my family because he grew up like a brother to me. And she grew up like a sister to me. So
that's so cute.
She's part of the family and stuff. But like, she can make German sound very beautiful. Mm-hmm. But there are times she can make it sound very awful. Very quickly. It's a tone thing. But it is possible to make it sound like a beautiful language, believe it or not. I've heard at least one person do it.
I always wonder how we sound. Like, do we have a harsh language? I know. I've heard crass. I have a friend who lives in England, and he says, like, Northerners in particular, very crass sounding. Like, ah!
Well, I would say that because I live here.
Yeah, because you're from the South.
You know.
Well, my parents have very strong Brooklyn accent, so I don't hear it.
Yeah, I think the thing I picked up when I went over to Germany a couple of times in Austria is how we walk. Mm-hmm. They can spot how we walk.
Yeah, really?
We walk.
Just kind of loosey-goosey or something?
Just kind of like, we got a ton of nut room, just kind of like walking around like we own the joints, you know, like they said they could spot an American from a mile away than the way they walk.
I went to, when I was like 10, I went to Europe with my parents, and I don't know how they knew. I guess it was my dad's giant fanny pack, but there were like some construction workers who yelled out, "Can I have a cheeseburger?" and then cracked up. And we're like, that's not even the right accent to insult my parents, but we're like, oh. And they were very tickled with themselves.
That's great. That's a good insult. That's such a little clever. I like that.
I wish we had one.
Yeah.
I'd be like, all right. Yeah, you really
were Americans. Yeah,
then they would feel real dumb, wouldn't they? They'd just say, thank you.
Would you like some fireworks as well?
Anything else? Some more freedom.
Uncle Sam top hat. Yeah,
exactly.
Whatever. But, you know, let's go back to this whole being preacher, pastor, daughter. How did that work out in your life?
My dad's so unique. First of all, my dad has a filthy mouth. My dad has a wonderful sense of humor. My dad's a huge stand-up fan, you know, always has been, always loves
jokes. Who was his guys? Who was her guys?
I don't even know. He loves Carlin.
Yeah.
And what he was really big on is like the thing that started his love for comedy is when he used to watch the old black and white films or something. And he's made me watch like 500 of them. And of course, now I can't even name a single one. But he started to like comedy because he liked those comedic kind of black and white films. The ones where you watch now and you're like, huh, is there a joke anywhere in here, because the comedy's so different.
What do you mean? We're talking about him. We're talking about the corner. Hey, Jimmy, what are you doing over there? You know? Oh, I'm just looking for a dame. Oh, look at them gams, you know?
Exactly. So that's how we started out. So he's always kind of liked, I guess, kitschier comedy, like the more exaggerated and silly he likes it. But he also really loves Lewis Black, so he likes political satire as well. All over the realm there. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think his favorite, like currently, is definitely Lewis Black. Yeah. Sometimes he'll call me and he'll be like, hey, have you heard of Chris Rock or just someone that's already so huge? And I'm like, yes, Dad, I have. And he's like, he's good.
Are you aware of this Dave Chappelle guy? This guy, he's got a show. It's remarkable. Although I'm wondering why Comedy Central filmed it in 4:3 and not 16:9.
He loved the Chappelle show. That was a big thing. So he's a unique priest in that one, you wouldn't know. He doesn't feel the need to kind of, have the same opinion. So he will respect you if you're an atheist or respect you if you're Jewish or anything like that. He just has his own beliefs, you know? And then two, to him, it's all about the lessons that you learn in it. So when I used to go to his sermons to listen, cause they were in Spanish and it would help and stuff. And I've been to a lot of different churches and I really liked his style, I guess. Because it's really more about, hey, what is the message in this instead of damnation to anyone who doesn't follow it. Mm-hmm. And so he's just very different. You wouldn't really know. And he's proud. He inappropriately shows some of my stuff to people he works with. Like, look at my daughter. And they're like, okay. She seems Delightful.
Oh, you've done a good job like raising her.
He has no idea what's appropriate. He's like, oh, look at her talk about, I don't even know. It's necrophilia funny. Is a good.
Yeah.
Look at her talk about necrophilia. Isn't that cute?
Isn't that cute? But no, I always feel like that's the important, like, especially like pastors that are like really cool pastors.
Yeah.
They can just let you be you. Cause I had one, and I think that's why, like, I identify myself as Christian, and I identify myself as believe in what I believe and stuff like that.
Exactly. And you should be able to do that without, you know, while respecting that someone else might identify as Jewish. And that's what I love about
it. And it was always about the lessons. It's not like, oh, no, let's not take this word for word.
Yeah, okay? I like that approach to it. I think that's the kind of approach that it promotes just like unity more so than division.
Exactly.
And that's what I think religion should be, unity.
And that's
so
really
division.
What it's about. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it all...
That's what it was supposed to be about. But
that's what the damn book was about.
Exactly. Instead, you see people just angrily like... shooting up Planned Parenthood and things like that instead.
Yeah, and taking one line out of context, or taking one line in particular and then hanging your hat on it.
Exactly.
And then spinning into a belief that doesn't even exist.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the type of Christianity that I like and that my dad promotes. And it sounds like that you had a pastor that promotes. And it really depends on your pastor. If you have a brim, you know,
a recovering alcoholic.
Oh, so he had some life experience.
He had a lot. He played in a band. He was like a musician, played in a band. He was an alcoholic, and then he just changed his whole life around and gave it up to God. And then
that's the way to do it.
You know, he just got involved.
Your eyes are kind of the same shade as your mustache right now. It's freaking me out.
Well, it changes from time to time. It's my mutant power.
Looks like you planned it. Like you dyed one of them.
Exactly.
Probably the mustache.
Probably the mustache.
Really harder to dye. Though some people get tattoos on your eyes. You ever see that? I don't, you don't like eye stuff?
I have an eye phobia.
Really?
You've Spencer Taylor, you have...
I find it.
You have found
the
nerve inside of me. You've cut me to the core. I'm exposed right now.
This is a strange one, an eye phobia.
I have an eye phobia. I had LASIK eye surgery.
Oh, gosh.
And the reason I had to do that is because I couldn't wear contacts. Because just touching my eyes, I don't know what it is. I can't do it.
Skeeves you out?
Yeah, skeeves me out. But I can't watch people put contacts in. I can't watch. Like, anytime horror movies, they do any type of eye thing, I can't watch. Like, any eye stuff whatsoever, off limits.
I don't have that at all.
What
about gore? You good with gore?
I'm good with the gore, but it's just the eye stuff.
Just the eye, just, as long as it's not eye
like the
gore.
Older brother, like, push that. That's more scary to me than people being disemboweled. Like, I
do you like horror films and stuff you can watch, like, or like you ever watch surgeries?
It's not particularly my favorite thing to watch. You know, just because my life is already stressful enough, I don't need to.
I love a good surgery. I love watching surgeries.
Yeah, if it was nice and just a short, boring surgery, I could probably, you know, mundane. But when you put a lot of suspense to carving somebody up, maybe not what I want. But no, with my eyes, like when I got my LASIK eye surgery, like.
Gosh.
It was. I always
have to keep them like they're like pinned open, right?
Yep, like Clockwork Orange, just like that.
Did they play those images too, just for fun?
No. But they might as well have done that. And it was very much like a cattle call, just moving you through. It was the best money I've ever spent, but the worst experience of my entire life.
Oh wow!
It was like that. That kind of tops cake is the worst experience of my entire life.
Well, now everyone knows how to skeeve you out. Just run up and.
Eyes, eyes. That's a big thing. Butt stuff still on the table, but eye stuff, no, not so much. But where were we?
I go off. I do this to people.
You jumped. You found my weakness, and then you just really just cut me wide open. And
this is what like my comedy's like this too. There's no, it doesn't really. Go together. I just have very abstract thoughts, and that's what happened here. I'm sorry.
That's what happened.
I'm sorry we derailed.
But you just directed it into a good direction of comedy.
Well, there we go.
You brought it all back around. We're pros here.
Yeah.
We're podcasting. You're
podcasting.
Yeah, you're a podcast pro as well. But you brought it all the way back around to comedy. How does, like you said, your father was into it, and, mm-hmm. and I think that's how a lot of people discover a lot of people's father. You just talk about Carlin. Carlin's like dad's love Carlin.
Dad's love Carlin.
Yeah, dad's love Carlin. But, like, who were the people that you were interested in?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Tell me about that.
So, when my mom likes to tell this story all the time, I used to cry, and she'd, like, play Emo Phillips.
Okay.
My parents, like, yeah, they would watch, like, whatever stand-up special was on, you know, sometimes mindlessly, sometimes, like, really enjoying it. They went and they've seen a lot of live comedy. My first live comedy show was with them. So it's something this is unique. My very first experience with live comedy wasn't, like, walking into an open mic or anything like that. It was Jim Gaffigan.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was started out real strong because I loved Jim Gaffigan. I think especially it was when he first came out. And so I loved everything about that. And I'd seen comedy a bunch growing up, but that was my first live experience. So that was real cool. Mm-hmm. But Emo Phillips has always been my absolute favorite. And are you familiar?
I'm aware of the name. I can't say I've probably heard a couple of his jokes just on the series, definitely. But I haven't. Like, you know, have seen a full thing.
You gotta watch him. I love Emo. So he's a very,
I get that he's very, a character. Yeah, exactly. I get very much who he is.
Yeah.
I understand his presence of what he means.
Exactly.
For sure.
And he was like huge in the 80s and the early 90s. And what he does with his comedy is misdirection. And that's something I find that very, I really like misdirection jokes, and I find it difficult to achieve them. True misdirection jokes.
Because it's the magic trick.
Yeah, exactly.
It truly is a magic trick.
Because when someone does, no offense, like a poorly constructed misdirection joke, the audience can guess where it's going very easily. You know what I mean? Like, I bet this is going to happen. And then they say that. And it's hard to not do that, especially when you're a comic, not to try to guess what the punchline is.
Yeah.
And the thing about Emo that I loved so much is his punchlines were so out of left field that it was difficult to guess. You could not see where he was going. You'd be like, maybe he's going this way, and then he'd just go the opposite direction.
Yeah, and you need that deep right brain thinking exactly. to pull something like that out.
And I loved that about him. So him and Stephen Wright and Mitch Hedberg. So when I was growing up and when I like really started to get into stand-up, it was always jokes more so than stories. And not that I don't like storytelling. I love storytelling stand-up. But I've always found something kind of special about a well-crafted joke that you could just read and it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of who's telling it, you know, and their expressions or something, because those were my favorite jokes. The ones where I can just come across it or someone could tell it to me badly, like my dad. That's how I heard a lot of jokes badly retold by him.
Because he's repeating whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
He heard,
and like, he's the worst. So he's like, okay, so there's this chicken. Wait, no. No, it was like a rooster or something. I don't know. The punchline has something to do with it. Like that's how he would approach retelling a joke. So even when he massacred them, his emo jokes are so funny.
Yeah.
Same with Stephen Wright. I just love a well-crafted, well-written joke from beginning to end. Just funny, can be retold and retold and retold.
Mm-hmm.
So that really shaped my comedy. I think when I first went out there, I was trying to do more storytelling, but that's just not natural to me because that's not what I grew up with. It's not what I can produce. So when I realized that and said, huh, why am I trying? Why am I forcing myself to be like, you know, like Louis or something? Because that's what's going on right now. It's more storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why am I trying to do that? Just go back to what I've always liked, which is short jokes.
Yeah. Joke after joke, which, you know, is the opposite of it's funny that you talk about jokes, how you came up. I came up like with the storytellers, you know what I'm saying? And the guys with the big performances. Like, and that's the thing, your parents watch stand-up specials, like, and I'm guessing you guys had cable growing up and you had access to it.
Yeah.
But like, my parents had four channels growing up. I don't know how we had stand-up like go on in our house.
Yeah.
But like.
But you did?
But we did.
Oh, cool.
Like, I think PBS was kind of responsible for that. They would get like old like HBO specials,
yeah,
and they would
replay
air
them and stuff.
They would replay them like on Saturday nights and stuff like that. Like I remember seeing like a Robin Williams special. Like, I was like
on PBS.
At PBS, and
it was
like
so random.
Yeah, like how did this ever happen? And of course, like you know, the Tonight Show, I would see Richard Lewis.
Yeah,
like Richard Lewis to me, like that's what a comedian is.
I love Richard Lewis.
Yeah, I was like that's what a comedian is. Like Richard Jenny. You know, like just, you know.
Oh, there it goes.
Yeah, there it is.
The coughing. Okay.
The coughing's out of nowhere. But Richard Jennings made you cough.
Yeah.
but like, yeah, it's like, it's weird that experience that you, those formidable eras, you know, like when I saw Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Like live on Sunset Strip. And I was like, that.
Yeah, this.
That right there. That.
So you've always been storytelling. That's always been what tickled your fancy.
Yeah, because storytelling's always been the thing for me. And like I said, like. Jokes, when you talk about jokes, like, it's like, God, that seems so hard. Like,
yes.
Like it's just like I told it, and that's only 30 seconds now. Yeah, like,
I was talking about that with Nick, another comic that you've had on the podcast, and we were comparing our sets, and I think in his 10-minute set, he had like 4 jokes. My 10-minute set, I had 16.
Yeah.
But since my mind works like that, I find it much more difficult to elongate a joke, and I'm not good at telling stories in general. They're disjointed, and you know, I'm not good at it in person. So why would I be on stage? But you're very personable. You keep conversations flowing, and you're not as, I don't know, erratic as I am. So it makes more sense that you would be a storyteller, and then I would be like short jokes. Next one, all right.
Next one, all right. But yeah, it's impressive to me how that you remember that all right in a row. Like,
I don't.
Like for me, you don't.
I don't remember half. I have so many of them that it's like not hard. I have a flow to it when I do like a normal set, but when I go to a mic or something, I'll either read them off just very mechanically, because that's what I want to see if the joke itself is funny, not me, which is a weird way to go about it, I guess. But the joke itself is funny. Then when I perform it, I know the joke stands alone, and that I can like kind of perform it up a little bit. But I have so many of them that if I'm just doing a 5-minute set or something and I see what the audience likes, I can just switch it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, they liked that necrophilia joke. They probably like another darker joke.
Let's go darker. And that's always good, because it's like bullets in the gun.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where like I commit to a 2-minute story or a 3-minute story, and nobody like last night I did a 5-minute set, and I basically did like an entire 3-minute bit.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
like,
crazy to me. couldn't if I wanted to.
Yeah, but like I was like, okay, well I've added this and this. Okay, now this 2-minute bit is now a 3-minute bit, and this is a 5-minute set. I'll just dick around for 2 minutes and then jump right into this. And but it backfired on me. It's like I don't think people got behind it as much as should. I think they liked it, but like, you know, I wasn't up there talking about like, you know, I hate my kids, I hate my wife, or, and it was just one topic
The way through.
Yeah,
and that's the hard thing.
Yeah.
About, I think that's equally as hard to remembering, maybe if you have 600 jokes, is to, when you start something, you can't just kind of drop it. Nope. If it's a story, you can't be like, never mind.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was already balls deep, and I was like, oh, this is going okay. I'm controlling, I'm performing this well, but I don't think they're digging it as much as they thought. But, well, I mean,
got another 2 minutes, got to start.
And then you start thinking, it's like, well, if I do it better and I'm more exciting, they're really going to get behind me. Like, oh, okay, well, I just kind of landed here. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I brought you this. it's like being an intern. Like, I brought you coffee. And they're like, thank you. You know,
That was great. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
Sticker or something?
That's great. Yeah, exactly. So it's very much like that. But like, I always envy people that have those jokes, and it's bullets and a gun.
There you go. Boom. You don't like it? There here's another one. Yeah.
You know, well, what made you think you could do stand up? Because not so much like, oh,
what made you think?
Who
you
made you think? I mean, in the sense, like, especially when I first started wrestling, I had no idea how to go about it.
Yeah.
I thought the way that you became a professional wrestler is you became a Division I football player. Jim Ross saw you do the bench press a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're in the WWE and you're Rocky Maivia at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But then you find out and do the research. There's school, there's this, and comedies, you know, you see open mics and you start doing this.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
How did you realize that comedy was even a thing you could possibly ever do?
I grew up painfully shy. Like, painfully shy. Like, if someone interacted with me, I'd be like, oh, God, please, God, why? just kind of shaking and stuff. So what I started to do when I was very little, I would practice responses in my head. And then...
Really? Because I do the same exact thing.
You do the same, like, someone's going to ask this, this will be my response. Yep. Exactly. So that helped de-stress. That sounds bad. Unstress. Mm-hmm. Right? It didn't de-stress me. It unstressed me.
Yes, unstress.
Is unstress a word? It helped. Me unwind. There we go.
Okay.
It helped me unwind a little bit, so that when like an adult or something was like, would you like some cookies? I'd be like, okay, you like cookies. You can do this. Yes, please.
The little person inside of you is going through the filing cabinet response.
Yes, I would like some. Thank you very much. You know? So and with my peers, I was still incredibly shy. I would have one or two friends. And when I'm with my friends, I'm completely loose. I would say I'm a shy extrovert, if that makes sense. When I'm around other people and I'm in my element, I feel fine.
Oh, absolutely. I'm
You're the same way.
Same exact way. I'm still very reserved with people, and I don't know if you have this, since we're talking about shyness. Do you ever run into somebody who you like and admire, either, you know, be a performer or another person, like, oh, I really like that person, I wish we could be friends, or whatever a situation, or like, oh, I really have looked up this guy.
Yeah.
And you meet that person, you have a good interaction, and you immediately want to run away as fast as possible so you don't ruin it.
He's like, I'm done. Yes. I nailed it. let's walk away. And walk then the away. Only positive, I don't have to say that one more thing. Yeah, that'll make them be like, can you go away from me? Yes, I definitely feel that all the time.
Yes, yeah. I do that a lot.
Yeah, I'm there with you. But it's so, like you, growing up with kind of like a shy extrovert, I had my friends and stuff, but when it was like bigger social circles, I couldn't even.
Oh, yeah, you just turn inward.
Yeah, inward.
And my girlfriend sees it a lot. She's firsthand of this nuclear waste site that is me, this radioactive bomb that just turns inward to himself. Oh. Yeah, like so, as soon as the bigger crowds get, you just turn inward. Just like we just went to a party recently, and my defense mechanism was always drinking, mm-hmm. and that's how I get past it. But now that I've tried to be as sober as I possibly can, I just went to a party for the first time and didn't have a drink.
Was there a pet there? That you could have pet the whole time?
I think there was a dog around, but
there we go.
He paid no attention to me.
Oh, no.
I didn't have that.
That's the worst.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was like the first party that I'd ever attended where I didn't get just drunk just to try and fit in or be comfortable around people. But I was social enough. I was sober. I was like, that was a big thing for me. Big accomplishment in my life.
Clap for you a little bit. That's awesome. Yeah, so it was mostly like that. And so I started to have funny responses in my head. And sometimes I'd write them down. And then I'd say them later on, which is kind of cheating, but whatever. And that's basically how stand-up is born, right? So you have a funny response, you write it down. And so since I was little, I've always wanted to be a writer. I didn't necessarily want to be a stand-up, and I've always wanted to be a comedic writer. Mm-hmm. And so eventually, I don't know why stand-up. I don't know what like made me decide stand-up, but I was just watching it as I was getting older, and around like 15, 16, I said, I want to do that instead of just comedic writing. Before, I would love to write for a different stand-up. I wanted to write for a show, but around 15 or 16, I'm like, that's what I wanted to try. Mm. So I did, and I've been doing it ever since. Mm. Yeah,
just as easy as that? You found an open mic, you did it?
Well, I did. I took a class, but I misunderstood the criteria. I thought you had to have a 5-minute set. So the very first day I did my 5-minute set, the same set that I did at the end of the class. So like I didn't change anything or anything like that. So I went up there. I'm like, all right. So that got me on stage for the first time. And then after that, I think the first time I ever emceed, it was like a really small room and I bombed. Like completely bombed because I didn't realize you can't just go up there with your prepared material. And I was a very different comic back then. And it was like 3 years ago. Very different set of material. And it did not go well. And I liked that. I'm like, it's my second time on stage. I bombed. Can't get worse than this. And so that was like the best thing that could have happened to me. Because it went really well the first time I went on stage. So the best thing is that right after that, you get knocked down because then you just go up from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I don't fear bombing, you know. You just do it.
It seems like that's when you start to get better.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't care.
Yeah, once you just, you're like, that didn't work. Because sometimes when you're like getting there, when you're becoming a good comic, you can look at the jokes and say, are these jokes not working? Or is it, a lot of people, you'll hear people, the audience was very dumb. Or I hate that after a mic. I'm like, was it? Were they? They were all really dumb. For everyone, you know,
you just didn't find them.
Yeah, they might not have felt you at this moment. Either your jokes work, or you maybe presented the wrong kind of jokes to this particular audience or something. But I hate when people like just blame the audience, and I also don't think that you should just blame yourself, because there's times where the audience is just, they don't want to hear short jokes or they don't want to hear long stories.
Yeah.
And so when you go up there presenting it, it's not like you could just switch your style. You know, you've got what you got.
You've got to be yourself, and like it's funny. In wrestling, a lot of people say, this was awful crowd, or you didn't do this. And I always try to pride myself on like, no, I got to go out there and figure out what they want.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not what the promoter wants or the thing that the internet community wants me to do that gets me booked and get them praising me. But it's a thing that the people that paid the tickets.
Yeah, it's for that particular audience right there.
Yeah, and so like I said, sometimes that doesn't make me an internet darling and gets me booked to places that probably give me the buzz that I need to continue to have a career. But I feel like there's an obligation to those people in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, always, if it's a paid show, I feel that obligation. And it's one of those things you got to figure out what they want and stuff like that. But the thing that I'm starting to find the difference between pro wrestling and comedy is that the idea that it's okay to bomb, it's okay to fail, and it's okay to just be, this is what it would be. Where it seems like in wrestling, there's such a pressure of it has to be done right because – you know, somebody had to set the ring up, somebody had to pay for the building. There's far more moving parts.
Yeah, there's so far much more going on.
Money. Where, you know, comedy, it freaks me out. It freaks me out that way because I put, especially even, and it probably will, but put so much pressure. I'm like, I need to do so well just even today, even though it's open mic. Or, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because, but then I'm like, all they did was just plugged in a microphone to a speaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like somebody.
People wandered in. Half of them are drunk. No one's paying attention.
Yeah, like my first like booking of an actual show, I showed up like an hour ahead of time. No, 90 minutes ahead of time. And nobody was there. The building wasn't even open yet. I'm like, I was freaking out. I'm like, what do you mean? The people are supposed to be here in half an hour. The door's open in half an hour.
Too professional.
Why is nobody here? Like, and then I realized, oh, because nobody's setting up a stupid ring, an entranceway, sound system.
You just plug something in.
Yeah, 150 chairs. Yeah.
Yeah. The end of a comedy show.
Like that like that's the thing that just still blows my mind. Yeah.
But so you've been, how has it been 2 years now or 1 year?
1 year.
1 year? Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's 1 year actually this month of March.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's real cool.
Yeah.
Come far in a year.
I'll do all right.
The cough of death.
Yeah. Can't take compliments too well. But
not me neither.
But I, you know,
I'm so sweaty. Like, I feel like I'm just like profusely sweating.
It's the hot lights. Huh. I do it that
way. I think I my hands always sweat. You see this?
Oh my gosh, are you okay?
My hands are
sweating. You have a fever, you're sweating it out.
It's like my hands and my feet sweat, and then like if I work out, kind of nothing else does. Just my hands get real sweaty. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Yeah.
There we go. If people were wondering about my sweat habits, I'm glad we got that
out of the way.
Yeah. I'm sure they were curious.
You know what? I faced a lot of Twitter questions about it. So I just,
she's going to be on the show.
She's going to be on the show.
If what about her sweat? What
about her sweat habits? So we've got that out of the way.
I'll tell you my phobia real quick. I realized it like, I think today. I don't like emus. Like they freak me out. Like I could be around one probably, but I don't like to see
emus?
Them. Yeah, I don't like to see them flail. I don't like large birds. I don't ostriches, no thank you. Ostriches can kick your skull in. I went to the Museum of Natural History when I was little, and then my mom told me that all those animals were real and they were stuffed, and that terrified me. And then I saw the ostrich, and it was like, and the one in New York, it's like leg is back, like it's about to kick. And that oh.
That image.
Yeah,
in your head,
no thank
forever.
You. I don't want ostriches anywhere near me, so you keep your ostriches if you've ever got one. Or emus, just no large birds. I like penguins. Penguins are pretty cute.
Penguins are okay.
Yeah.
They can't kick you.
That's true. I've heard that some of them, like the emperor ones, get like 4 feet tall. Though that's not the coolest thing. No. I wish they were a little smaller.
Yeah,
they're real cute though.
Cute and adorable.
They're cute and adorable. Just like don't peck me to death.
Just don't peck you to death.
Yeah.
But you know, we were talking. You were talking about your set earlier and the different jokes that you have and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I've wanted to talk to you for a while, but I think the big thing that like was a catalyst. Like, oh no, I definitely need to get. Like Spencer in here and talk about this. It was a Facebook post that you posted, and it was just a Facebook post, and you explained it very well. But but the thing with the beauty of podcasting is you can explore from all different avenues and angles and stuff like that. And it was a very interesting position, and it was basically, I'm not going to try and read this word for word, but it was basically this situation where, you know, in the past year and a half, you dropped, you know, all your racial jokes and. You know, all the jokes about being a female.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be known as
I don't think I ever had female jokes. But yes, I didn't want to be just when I was doing it was working.
Yeah.
You know, I was getting accolades.
And
I
it does
come
because
up,
people,
yeah. people like
and
it. Yeah,
you know, like I said, when people talk about they beat their kids and
yeah,
I hate
exactly.
my wife and stuff
and
like
people
that.
People are like, yeah,
and then,
I hate
you know,
my
that's
wife
okay.
Too.
You know,
and that's good.
Well written jokes.
We
and
need
fine.
Those that type of comedy.
Yeah.
But just personally. I didn't like that people were commenting on my race when I got off the stage. Like people would say, you're very funny, but they'd be like, oh, my daughter's biracial. And like, that does not help my stand up whatsoever. That's not feedback. You know what I mean? It's not negative or positive feedback. I can't do anything with that. And then I thought, hey, that's what they're taking away from my set. Cause that's how I would end it. I didn't do all, you know, racial jokes.
Yeah.
And I didn't really do like the stereotypical, like, you know how brown people are, blah, blah, blah kind of jokes. But I still had them in there. And I didn't like that was what they were getting from it. I'd rather them say, oh, I saw a stand-up comedian. She was really weird. Then I saw a stand-up comedian. She was interracial, just like Jerry or something like that, you know? And that's the kind of feedback I think I was getting a little more than made me comfortable. And it's not necessarily what I find funny. I appreciate all types of humor and I'll like watch a stand-up special where it is very funny to point out the differences between black people do this and white people do that. But it's been done and it's been done very well. I don't, and I just didn't want to be caged into that. I didn't want to be booked as a female comic. I didn't want to be booked as an interracial comic. I wanted to be booked as a comic that people, if they close their eyes and again, or just read the joke, they'd say, this is a funny joke. I don't know the gender of this person. I don't know the race of this person. I just know that this joke is good. And that's what I'm aiming towards.
Well, where does that come from you? Like you could take the easy route and where, like, you know, like I'm new and just like, oh gosh, I just hope I write something that makes people laugh.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's that feeling of like, I just hope I write a joke that makes people laugh. And then it's like, you know, sometimes I'll even write this like, oh, this is a little hacky, but I know this is going to work for this room.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll go ahead and do it. Cause I just want to make people laugh at the end of the, you know, but then like, I'll hate myself afterwards about it and then I'll get rid of it. But at the same time too, I'm like, oh, I got to come back to this. Or like, there's the room where I'm like, oh, I definitely got to say it like this. You
exactly.
know, and like, what made you say, I'm not going to go that route anymore. I'm not going to take that.
Like, I think there were a couple of factors, but the main ones being, I started watching a lot of female comics and I started posting on Reddit my jokes and stuff and my jokes were going well. And one of the biggest compliments I got were, oh, you're not like a typical female comic. And I hated that. Like, I hate that there's this idea that there is a typical female. And I hated even more that after I started, like, really watching just females. I've watched, you know, the big ones, but just, like, looking for open mics, you hear the same types of jokes over and over.
It seems to be, like, you know, it's very nice to see women at the forefront.
Yes.
But it seems to me that there's a certain, like, genre of women that are very brash
how
they say things.
Exactly.
And it catches people off guard. Much in the same way that I think, you know, black comedians in the 90s and the early 2000s were talking such a way that people hadn't talked before.
Exactly.
And it kind of shocks them out of it. Like I said, you know, and it's good. And people can do it very well. And, and
people can really, really dominate.
Really. And then also they can do it with a very smart edge to it.
Yeah.
And have some credibility in their joke writing. But like, it gets to a point like, these are all just kind of...
It's kind of the same joke recycled. It might be a new perspective, but it's a topic that's been done a lot. And when I was getting those comments like, oh, you're not like a typical female comic, or I like this joke, it didn't seem like a typical female comic, I didn't like that. I wanted to change the image of typical female comic. I get this a lot after shows as well, and I know people mean well, and they mean it as compliment. Oh, I don't find girls funny. I enjoyed you. I'm like, I don't know what you want me to say to that. You know, like, oh, you don't write like a lot of women write. And when I was doing shows and there's another woman on the show, they would compare me to that woman rather than everyone. You know what I mean? So it wouldn't be like, oh, you had a great set. It was like, your set was good. You're so much better than that other girl. I'm like, why is it a competition between me and her?
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't like that idea that if there's a younger generation of like 6-year-olds who want to become comedians, I don't want them to see me and be like, I have to, you know, dress a certain way or talk about certain subjects to be funny or have mass appeal. Because that's not true. You can change at any point, like your image and stuff like that. And I did that. I went from, oh, she's a quirky, like a female comic. She's just talking about race and stuff like that. I didn't want that. I didn't want people younger than me to take that out of context and be like, oh, this is what makes her funny. Because that's what I don't like about looking online. I'll be like, oh, well, she's talking, you know, about having sex in her vagina. She's being very crass. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is it can be very funny and it can be done well.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people only want to see that they don't even consider that other options can be funny.
That female can be anything else other
exactly.
than that.
And so many women might like start out like I am now, where it's like they have a type of joke that they like that they think are funny, but then they present it and they don't like, the people don't want to hear it. They're like, oh, talk about your vagina or something like that.
Yeah.
And then they feel the pressure to do that. So I just kind of wanted to break out of that mold. I didn't want to be compared with every female. I just wanted to be a comic.
Yeah, and I think John Ridley or Wrigley. I'm forgetting his name. The guy who wrote 7 Years as a Slave, 14 Years as a Slave. 12 Years as a Slave. I knew it was somewhere in the middle. The guy who wrote that, and I think he also worked on Red Tails as well. He was a writer. He was actually a stand-up comedian as well. But of course, like he was in African American, mm-hmm. and he was doing it in like the early 90s during the Def Comedy era. But he wasn't like those comedians. He's more of a Dick Gregory type of person, and he got very frustrated by that and actually ended up quitting and stopped doing stand-up and started to become a writer.
Yeah.
But it's a sense of, you know,
you should be saying this because you look like this. I don't like that.
And the thing is, to me, is like, I, as well as written as his movies are, you know, like, and I've seen, you know, parts of Red Tails and parts of 12 Years a Slave and stuff like that. And obviously somebody who is that good at like writing and doing this, I can imagine his jokes were very good.
Yeah, probably well-crafted and funny.
Yeah, and I'm saying he could have been a great comedian because whatever was going in the current get lost.
And it's such a shame that he felt like he couldn't, you know, stick it out and like do that. It makes sense because when people have an expectation for you, it can either work in your favor or against. When I go up, sometimes my first joke, I can see people like, oh, I can see it pop in their head like, oh, this isn't what I thought it would be, which is fine. But there's also the crowds who are like, this isn't what I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't mention once that you're a female. I don't even know what race you are. What is this? You know, mm-hmm. So it's such a shame that he felt like he couldn't, you know, continue. But that's the pressure that the audience and, you know, media and stuff that happens.
Yeah. And
they kind of shape who gets big.
It's such an art. You have to decide what it is you want to be, you know, as an artist and stick to it. And I felt like that way with me in wrestling. So I very much sympathize in that because everybody right now needs to do a million flips.
Yeah.
A million.
It's got to be real flashy.
It's got to be real flashy. You got to do a million false finishes. And guys right now are like, I hate to say it, but like fake MMA guys. Like they're like kicking each other and hitting each other like harder than they need to be. Like I see guys like really punching each other in the face.
Oh, wow.
Because unfortunately, wrestling fans know what a real punch looks like because of UFC.
Yeah.
So guys are like, oh, let's do this. And it turns into like, and it's like, I don't feel like I need to punch somebody directly in the face
exactly.
to do my craft or my art. You know, I feel like if I just like,
I like that saying, you should put that on something. I don't feel like I need to punch someone in the face to do my art. Because that can work for stand-up and for wrestling. I like that a lot. I like that phrase.
Yeah, but it's true. Like a lot of guys are doing it. And I was like, I don't, the art of it is to make it look like you kill somebody, but you don't, you know? And that's, but unfortunately nobody wants comedy in the wrestling. People sit in the front row with their arms crossed and like, oh, show me something. Yeah. Do a bunch of spots. Do a bunch of this. Do a bunch of moves. Yeah. That's what we want to see. And nobody wants
to
see.
We didn't come here to laugh.
Yeah.
Came here to be scared.
Exactly. Nobody wants to see a bit. So I feel that way, you know? So I very much, you know, it's a concern of me and it makes me look back that, oh, maybe I should have took like jiu-jitsu or
but your fans, the great thing about going a different route is what my friend Derek was like a huge fan of yours. Mm-hmm. And I remember when he like saw you, he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Jake's here. So the fans you make are just such genuine fans. And it might be cool to have like a little more mass appeal. But I think there's something so special about being kind of niche and then, you know, being kind of alt-y and then having those fans who are like this guy and they really get it. Mm-hmm. So that's such a cool
thing. Is that something that you want?
Yeah, that is what I think. As much as I'd love to, you know, to get huge and stuff like that and sell out, I don't even know, Madison Square Garden or something like that in my wildest dreams, I would rather have just like a solid group of fans who just like me, who really like my stuff and aren't like, you know, bandwagoners or just laughing because I'm saying what they want to hear. I just want people to like the jokes. I want them to enjoy it and to take an interest in me and the jokes. That's it. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like alt comedy. I like it for that reason because I feel like those fans are like true fans. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
Cool.
And is there anything that I wanted to make sure we hit that topic as hard as we could? Did we cover that?
Punched it.
Punched it real good. But
the end.
We're getting pretty close to the end here. And I always, and this kind of, you know, kind of dovetails into where I always lead towards the end of this podcast. And, you know, I get people in here with varying degrees of success, and I always like to ask this question and this topic. It's very open-ended. You can jump into, I'm just going to throw something at you. It's not even going to sound like a question. It may sound like eight questions, but I'll just throw all this at you. And you throw it on back, whatever comes to your mind.
All right.
The topic of success.
Success.
Like, what is it to you? Do you think it's obtainable? Do you feel like you'll be happy when you get it? And what is it in your mind that like, oh, if I do this, I will be successful? And do you feel like you'd be happy if you do it? Do you feel like you have to sell out to get it? Do you feel like you have to do this? Or do you feel like you can get it a different way? Just the topic of success.
All right, I got this. All I want to do is be able to do what I love, which to me, it's two things. It's either writing the jokes or writing and stand up and be paid well enough to do it. I don't need to be rich. I don't need to be super famous. I just want to do something I enjoy for the rest of my life and be comfortable enough. I don't even mind being a little bit poor for all of my life as long as I'm doing something that I really enjoy. That's all I want. And I think that's completely attainable. You just got to work hard. you know, stick with it. Stick with what you like, which is my jokes. I'm not going to change them because I'd rather be, you know, a lesser known comic who's doing some rooms where people are really enjoying it than a huge comic who, you know, has to conform to that stereotype just to make it. I don't want that kind of fame. I don't want people to follow me around and like want pieces of my hair or anything. That creeps me out. Fame. I find fame very scary. I just want.
Or even a moderate level of success.
Yeah, exactly.
You probably people still want that. They probably want pictures of your feet. So.
Yeah, like creepy stuff. Well, that I don't care about. I don't have particularly cute feet. You guys can have that. But my hair.
Well, don't give it away for free, Spencer. You can make some money on that.
You know, some sassy knee shots or something like that. But yeah, I don't want to be stalked. I want to be able to do what I'm doing and be paid well enough to do it. You know, a living wage. That's it.
Well, somebody that, you know, you talk about your art and your things, and as we all know, you have to suffer for your art and everything, yeah. And there's going to be a lot of downs. How do you deal with the downs? How do you deal with the roadblocks that get put in your way towards success?
Well, I would have to say at this point, most of my roadblocks are self-inflicted. Okay. I'm incredibly lazy and unmotivated, so I just have to, like, really focus on getting myself, because when I sit down and I write, it's like every once in a while, like 50 jokes, just like. Yep.
I have the same thing too.
Or I could sit on the couch and play video games for like 3 days, which I do also. So it's really just buckling down, forcing myself to, come on, you got to write something today. Write at least one or two new workable jokes, blah, 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 blah. So at this point right now, it's all self-inflicted. I have a really nice, well-paying job right now, so I don't want to leave it yet. But it's fine because I'm saving up so that when I'm eventually going to move. So financially, I'm saving up. I'm building up my set so that at some point I can have more exciting roadblocks that aren't so self-inflicted. You know what I mean? So I just keep my eye on the prize and work towards it slowly and steadily. I don't try to sprint. I don't think like, I should be on Conan today. I shouldn't. You know, like, what am I doing? Why am I here? I just focus. I have a plan, and my plan is a 5-year plan. You know, that's nice and attainable.
You have a 5-year plan.
Yeah.
Can you share any of it with you?
Yeah, 5-year plan. Do stand up all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, there we go. There's the whole plan. But basically, it's just where I think I need to be within the next 5 years. And hopefully by the end of it, that's my goal, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, for anybody that wants to know where you're at in the immediate future, how can they get in touch with you, connect with you?
Yeah.
And when you give your Twitter, please follow her because you are a very good Twitter follower. You put jokes on there, you know, just because sometimes a joke doesn't work at an open mic, but it works on Twitter.
Yeah.
You were definitely one of those people that inspires me to do that more.
Oh, thanks.
And it makes me like, I need to start doing this more. So, yeah. And you're definitely one of those reasons. So definitely when you give your Twitter, make sure you give her a follower.
Cool. It's at Spensa Taylor, which is SPENCATAYLA. And then my Facebook is facebook.com/haha Spencer Taylor. Mm-hmm. It used to be at Spencer Taylor, but I don't remember the password to that one. So I had to make a new one. So, okay. The end.
Anything else, website or anything else you want to plug since you're here?
No, I'm good.
Oh, now you're slipping in yourself.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm done.
Okay, she's. It's already past midnight. She's already turned back to her natural form, uncomfortable. But Spencer, thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you. I'd shake your hand, but my hands are inordinately sweaty. So
yeah, I'd slip right off.
Yes,
salute.
I salute you.
This has been a DSCT.TV production.